Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
The United States Supreme Court today declined to hear the case of Boston gangster James Whitey Bulger. Without commenting, the High Court included Bulger's case in the list of those cases that it will not review. Bulger appealed his 2013 conviction for his role in several murders. Bulger's attorneys were arguing that jurors should have been allowed to hear about Bulger's immunity deal with a now-dead federal prosecutor. Bulger continues to serve a life in prison sentence. He is 87 years old. Joining us from Harvard Law School is retired federal judge Nancy Gertner. She's a WBUR legal analyst. Hello, Judge Gertner.
Hi.
So Bulger's lawyers argued before the U.S. Supreme Court, or wanted to argue before the U.S. Supreme Court, that the judge at Bulger's trial should have let him tell the jury that a now-dead federal prosecutor had granted him immunity. Is this a usual or legitimate legal argument for an appeal in a case like Bulger's?
It's a legitimate argument for appeal, claiming that the judge made a mistake in keeping out evidence that it would have enabled Bulger to testify about an immunity deal. But the judge was completely within her rights to decline, allowing him to do that. You can raise it on appeal, but the standard once a trial judge makes an evidentiary ruling like this is whether she has abused her discretion, which is a fancy way of saying, that she has a range of decisions that she can make that are all legitimate and they would support her for the decisions that she made. The notion that the Supreme Court would not take this case, the Supreme Court does not take cases that are deeply fact-bound and where the law is so clear. So that wouldn't have been a surprise at all.
So now that the Supreme Court has made this decision, not commenting on it, by the way, what's next for Bulger? All appeals have now run their course?
All direct appeals. He now can go into court. Habeas relief is available to him within as long as he files a petition within a year of his conviction becoming final. So there is another round, but the avenues for claims in that regard will be even more narrow for him. But he could file a habeas petition challenging the effective assistance of counsel, a whole host of things which could not have been addressed the first time around.
Let's shift gears to the state Supreme Judicial Court now, specifically this continued legal wrangling over former state chemist Annie Ducon and what are now called Ducon defendants. So just to summarize, in 2013, Annie Ducon pleaded guilty to falsifying drug tests that were used as evidence in criminal cases, and yet there's still no agreement on how to handle the thousands of criminal convictions that were based on her faulty testing. So amid all this wrangling, in May of this year, prosecutors said that her testing was involved in 24,000 cases. So that prompts the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts to again ask the state Supreme Judicial Court to overturn all convictions connected to Annie Ducon. So what will the state Supreme Judicial Court be considering when they hold the hearing on the ACLU's request this November?
What they're going to consider is whether or not it is possible to address 24,000 cases on an individual case-by-case basis. In other words, whether or not there are enough lawyers, enough judges, enough time in order to do that. The ACLU is actually asking for two things. On the one hand, asking for dismissal or at least asking for a time limitation in the alternative. The complexity of this is that many of these, 60% of these were possession cases. And once it was clear that there was a chemist report saying, hey, this is this particular drug, the lawyers would quite rightly say there was not much to litigate, and so people pled guilty. Now that you take out the test because it was tainted, the difficulty of trying cases, of sort of winding the clock back, getting discovery, doing additional investigation, is simply more than the system, than the resources that the system has, either public defender resources, judge resources, all sorts of resources. It's a very different case when you're now capable of contesting everything in a way that you never did before. I might add the other urgency here is that there are people doing time. There are people who are on the verge of being deported. There are people whose sentences may have been enhanced because of Dukan convictions. It's a really substantial matter. It's really a substantial matter, and the clock is ticking here. The consequences of Dukan's misconduct just, it seems to me, escalate every day.
But, you know, WBUR did a lengthy online and radio special about a lot of the stories involving the Dukan crisis. And just to summarize, prosecutors basically said, look, we held special sessions to deal with these cases that were based on faulty tests by Annie Dukan. And then after this latest number of 24,000 cases affected, the Essex County District Attorney tells the Washington Post, well, you know what, of all the cases so far, ever since this first came up, that have been retried in Essex County and dealt with again in Essex County, the drug evidence had a complete perfect match to the drugs as they were originally tested by Dukan, suggesting, of course, that the testing wasn't really all that faulty to begin with. What do you think of that argument?
Well, first of all, the initial question was whether you deal with this case by case or whether you deal with it systematically, i.e. by dismissing cases. To say that we can now find a portion of the sample, that of the drug sample, that we now know to have been untainted, it seems to me is extraordinary, because Dukan not only falsified test results, mixing known drugs with the samples from the crime scene, there were false weights, which trigger in some of the mandatory minimums, and there were questions about the accounting and the chain of custody, sort of fundamental questions of how the evidence was addressed. If Essex County is saying that it can unpack this on an individual case-by-case basis, the ACLU and the public defenders counter with, you can't. Mm-hmm. And in addition, different districts are now doing it differently. You can't. And by the time we have finished litigating this, people would have served their time, or the consequences of bad convictions will be already playing out in their lives.
Right. And just briefly, I mean, this has been going on for several years. She was convicted in 2013. I mean, this went on for quite some time. We've known about this for a while. It already seems like it's taken a very long time to figure out what to do about these cases. What's the holdup?
Well, I mean, it took until May of 2016, apparently, for the prosecutors under the gun of the Supreme Judicial Court to finally come up with a list that people believe to be even close to an accurate list of the people who are affected by the Dukan crisis. I mean, put it the other way. If it were an individual case and that someone was prosecuted for drug charges, and it came out that the chemist rather manipulated the drugs, tainted the drugs, made up the weights, etc. An individual case the defense could easily argue for the dismissal of that case, that the integrity of the system had been undermined by that misconduct. Just because this is 24,000 doesn't make that argument less important.
And of course, we should point out that doesn't even mention the cases of Amherst chemist Sonia Farrakh. She admitted that she often used drugs in the lab and was intoxicated while she was testing them, and she did that for 8 years. So there will likely be legal wrangling over what to do about those cases as well.
But you know, to describe it in terms of wrangling doesn't, it seems to me, minimizes the seriousness of this. This is scientific testing which was manipulated and tainted, on which convictions, imprisonment, collateral consequences depended.
But it's still before the High Court to figure out what to do about it.
It is. The brief was just filed last week, and the High Court now has to decide whether or not to deal with this systematically. There would be a sort of a system-wide remedy, and if it's going to be case by case, how can you speed up this process, or can you speed up this process? All of this was exacerbated by a letter that had gone out from the DA's office at the beginning of September, which was telling people, here you have this case and you can go get your own lawyer and get in touch with the DA's office. And it was a letter expressly against the directive of the Supreme Judicial Court judge who's in charge of the case. Hmm. So this has made an even more contested proceeding at the SJC.
Well, but just tell me just very, very briefly, because we're essentially out of time, but I'm fascinated by this. What does this say about the Massachusetts criminal justice system?
Well, it's very, very troubling. A, that it could happen. B, that it could have gone on for as long as it did. see that the system is taking, 4 years to respond to an error of this magnitude. That's very troubling.
All right. Retired federal judge Nancy Gertner lectures at Harvard Law School and is WBUR's legal analyst. Judge Gertner, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, should there be more regulations for Airbnb rentals? I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.